Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And that it gets cold there.
That was the hard... I don't care about the cold. I have clothing. The hard part was knowing that they look at me as someone who is who's doddering now.
I am old.
I can't climb the steps.
You're also...
I climbed 17. Okay, I wasn't carrying a baby, but I climbed 17. I went up 11.
Not dead yet, Liz.
Maybe by this afternoon, but not now.
Sorry, he's an impediment to your independent wealth, Liz.
Yeah. Do you enjoy...
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
And now for rebuttal, if there is rebuttal.
Liz is waiting to call in. I think she'll be booked for Monday's show.
Okay. We are live at Chatter, as happens all the time on Mondays and Fridays, and today is a Friday. We have a big crowd. It's nice to see everybody.
Thank you.
Even though it is raining here in Washington, D.C., the rain has resumed. Over the last 15 days and the next five, it's mostly, largely rain.
With a couple of 80s.
Yeah, we're at the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest at Chatter. Where, as I say, we are full service and for profit. Gary Braun is here. Gene McManus is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is here to run the board. Later in the show, we will have Ann Hornaday and we'll have Steve Sands. There's a couple of things to read. First, Tia and her whole family from York, Pennsylvania. It's Tia's birthday.
All right. Happy birthday, Tia.
Have a birthday, Tia. Have a Slim Jim.
Have a Slim Jim. Yeah, somebody said, two. Well, Cheryl Naaman in Crofton, Maryland writes, I'm a little from the beginning. I believe your article and subsequent book, Back for More Cash, about the blizzard of 92 with the lawn chairs blocking the cleared space was about me and my roommates as we lived at the corner of Utah and Rittenhouse, which I know very well. But this is the first time I have written. The letters are so funny and smart, the intimidation factor is real, but here goes. Enclosed are a few things. A box of Slim Jims. Why not? The Slim Jims are out for everybody to have, provided they order and pay for
breakfast. Don't fill up on that stuff.
The person I'm related to by marriage and also a little thanks to me, the problem is he's from Chicago, Evanston, to be exact, need I say more. When I hear Wilbon's on your show or on PTI, I just shake my head. The weather, the hot dogs, pizza, sports, museums, you name it. Everything's better in Chicago, yada, yada, yada. But we love listening to your podcast and discussing them at the end of the day and disappointed when one was too busy at work to listen. His birthday is February 26th, so that's coming up shortly.
Yes.
Right?
3 days.
We'd love if you and the crew could sign this card and give a shout-out to Ira Naaman, which we have done. We've signed the card, and there is the shout-out. I recently had a lechisery moment at my local dry cleaner in Crofton. It was an early, rainy Saturday morning, and I was waiting in line, and this man keeps looking at me. I look away, turn back. He's smiling at me. Nervously, I stand there racking my brain. Is this someone I should know? As he leaves the counter and walks straight up to me and says, lechisery. Alas, my black Tony hat. She had a hat on. Was snugly positioned on my head. In an instant, I had a friend. We spoke in the parking lot and laughed about the connective tissue. So that's very nice. I also got a book here from Stephen Z. Tully, which says, My Life in Yankee Stadium, 40 Years as a Vendor and Other Tales of Growing Up Somewhat Sane in the Bronx.
How about that?
I call you Tony as I feel I know you, having watched you on PTI since the show started. As you can see, I've written a book, wanted to get you a copy. You have inspired me for years. If you have the time, I think you will appreciate this. I was a vendor of 40 years. I've also had an acting career, having appeared in one of your favorites, The Sopranos, as recurring character Allen Ginsberg, Tony's accountant.
Cool.
Anyway, I hope you enjoy it.
I know
feel
that.
Free to let me know your thoughts.
I just rewatched the entire Sopranos season, up to season 6. You should rewatch that show. It's fantastic.
That's a great show.
But I know exactly who's talking about.
So there we go. So we've got that. So we will start the show today. As I said last week and the beginning of this week, this is the week of death for PTI. There's no NBA. Yeah. We don't do the NHL. College basketball is hit or miss. I mean, it really is. Although we had Jay Wright on yesterday, and Jay Wright was great because Jay Wright is a lifelong Philadelphia guy. And Jay Wright talking about what winning the Super Bowl means to Philadelphia families who have convened around television sets for 30 and 40 and 50 and 60 years to watch the Eagles. It was right out of Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I'm listening to Jay Wright thinking, is Robert De Niro in the back of the shot here? Because it was exactly the way they looked at games. And so Jay Wright was wonderful, but we don't have much to talk about. And now the NBA is back. And so, I mean, this is going to thrill Wilbon, obviously. Steph Curry last night got 44. The Warriors won. I don't want to go too local, But the Wizards won again.
At Cleveland.
At Cleveland. And yeah. Cleveland was up by considerable margins in the first half because yes. I watched the first half.
Right.
And I thought the Wizards would definitely lose that game. And they won again. And the Wizards are now 8-2 without John Wall. I'm going to broaden this out a little bit to include Duke University. Because Duke University is now 4-0 without Marvin Bagley. And Marvin Bagley is going to go 1 or 2 in the draft. 1, 2, or 3. I mean, Duke now is Kentucky.
Yep.
They recruit one and dones, you know, and they get out. So his career, much like Kyrie Irving's career, is very, very short and cut back by injuries. This happened to Kyrie Irving 6, 7 years ago whenever he was one and done at Duke. Duke's 4-0 without Marvin Bagley. The Wizards are 8-2 without John Wall. Marvin Bagley is the best player on Duke. John Wall is the best player on the Washington Wizards. But without those two players on that team, the Wizards last night, Thomas Satoransky had 17 points and 8 assists and no turnovers.
No turnovers.
He had no turnovers. That's a really great line.
Yeah.
They had 5 guys in double figures and 3 more with 8 or 9. So this is the phrase everybody
they
eats.
They had 8 guys with 8 or more. Wow.
Everybody eats. And that's why they're better right now. And with Duke, everybody eats. And that's why they're better right now. You don't bench Marvin Bagley or John Wall. You don't. No, of course not. But this is the coaching moment. This is the coaching opportunity. How do you convince these great players that what has happened in their absence should change the way they play? How do you do that? How do you do it?
You just point to current experience, I guess. I mean, as well as the scoring, Tony, and this has been the case in just about all these 10 games, 29 assists on 44 made field goals. That's a tremendous ratio there.
Yeah.
And 7 guys with multiple assists. But I think it's delicate because the coaching, and this is sort of, you and Aldridge had a conversation about this weeks ago. I don't know that it's as much, it's 50-50. It's okay, John, look how successful we've been playing this way. And it's okay, guys, you need to keep playing this way because they are as a team passing better without him. It's not because the ball got stuck on John Wall entirely. It's because guys would stand around and wait for John Wall to do something. So everyone has to they all have to figure out, John Wall included, and the team as it's constituted without him, they all have to figure out how to incorporate him without sort of messing up the mojo.
And let me say something cynical here. As someone who used to have to manage Tony Kornheiser,
I was just going
to
ask you this about editing.
Michael Wilbon,
yes, how you
Tom Boswell,
yes.
Well, Andy Beyer.
Yep.
It is not going to work.
A lot of egos in the room.
It is not going to work. John Wall is going to come back, and he's going to do exactly what he did, and Scott Brooks is going to have to do. I mean, I just don't think he can make it work.
But you did that. You had people who were very egotistical, very confident, very sure of themselves, very honored, and you had to get us, each of us, all of us, to do different things every once. How did you do it?
On different days.
How'd you do it?
You all did not all have to sit in a locker room and write columns on the same day.
Occasionally, but rarely.
Rarely.
Well,
yeah.
Large events.
Well, large events.
Yes.
That was a juggling act.
Yeah.
Somebody had to go to the loser's locker room, and that was always a battle royal.
The prickliest part is going to be his minutes, because Satoransky has played really well and has earned more minutes.
So is he going to go down to 11 minutes a game like he used to get? I don't think so. So what do you do? What are the keys? How does it work?
I don't think it can work. I honestly don't think it can work.
We'll have to see how it plays out.
I mean, he'd have to be a spectacular coach to make that work. He'd have to have like a Belichick sort of dominance.
Well, Mike Krzyzewski has that.
To say my way or the highway.
Or John Wall would have to surprise us with his maturity.
What you're saying is very interesting, because the difference in the situation to me is that Marvin Bagley's not going to be at Duke next year. He's got however many games till the end of the year, whenever they're eliminated, that's it. That's his career. Mike Krzyzewski can be rougher with him if he chooses
right.
to be,
because
he's not coming back. Scott Brooks, John Wall's coming back, makes a lot more money than Scott Brooks,
so
even though Scott Brooks
point,
makes a lot of money.
Your point right there just shows why these two
situations are really not comparable. Duke over recent years is not the same makeup of a team that it used to be.
Yeah.
And they take 2 to 3 months to figure out how to play together. That's why they schedule those tough games in the beginning of the season. And they're not even like other teams in the ACC, like UVA, that as a team prescribe to a certain model of play. So I think it's much easier for the stature of Coach K to say, this is what it's going to be.
Yeah, I do too.
And even if you don't want to buy into that, that's fine.
Just
use this as a practice field to launch yourself into the pros. With John Wall,
harder.
The game like last night just makes it that much harder because it becomes now a national story, not just one that's regionalized.
They're 8-2 without him. And that is so much better than anybody imagined.
But doesn't a Krzyzewski also have a problem with somebody who knows he's going to be a one and done? And it's like, I'm in this to get a high lottery pick.
Yeah.
I'm not listening to your stand back and wait for
it's
somebody
possible.
Else.
All of those things are possible. One of the triumphs of Villanova is that Villanova doesn't have that kind of player. And Villanova is winning 30 games every single year and is competitive for the national championship. I would say that about Virginia, but they have not yet been competitive for the national championship.
The Wizards host the 25-33 Charlotte Hornets tonight. With a healthy John Wall and a full complement of players back-to-back off a win at Cleveland, they would lose this game more than 50% of the time.
They're not going to lose tonight.
Well, we'll learn a lot. Yeah. That will tell you a lot if
it's
they
true.
Don't.
Yeah,
it's
that will
true.
Tell you a lot if they don't.
In other news, a 15-year-old Russian girl won gold in the most viewed event in the Olympics, the women's figure skating. It's the number one event. She beat a 18-year-old girl. This has happened
18-year-old
before.
18-year-old Russian.
18-year-old right? Russian girl. Oksana Bayul was, I think, 16 or 17 years old. How old was Tara Lipinski? She was a teenager, wasn't she?
I think
this
she
girl's
was.
The youngest ever, though.
Ever, right. Yeah. She's also the world junior champion. So, you know, that
last
would be
year.
So, like, the world junior champion at Wimbledon does not win the main draw, you know. So this is a big deal. We got Squadouche, our highest skater, finished 9th. With the men's, our highest skater finished 7th. It's not like we owned the event. We didn't know, but we were competitive in the event. We were on the medal stand almost all the time for many, many years. This is the number one thing in terms of viewers. Women's ice skating, women's figure skating, right? This is the number one deal.
You,
we got nothing.
Did you see the Russian coach, the woman coach of those two skaters, the gold and the silver? She's right out of the Americans, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You do not want to mess with her. Yeah. It's no surprise that those two girls won the top two
so
slots.
So this 15-year-old apparently backloaded her routine. I didn't see it, but the front half had no jumps.
Nothing.
And she had all 11 jumps in the back half, what they call backloading.
Right.
And she made them, but the rationale being later jumps are scored more favorably because theoretically you're tired.
Yeah.
Or
you're
recency
tired.
Effect.
She
or
made
whatever.
All of them.
Yeah.
Our people, you know
did
where you can find them? On their can. Our people are on the ice on their can.
Well, it's slippery. I mean, it's hard. You're wearing a blade on your foot.
I have to say I watched every minute of it. The rest of the field could not compare to those two girls. It was like they were just
battle for third
in a different arena. I mean, those two were.
See, do you have any problem with the American
transcendent
Nagasu saying, "I was just out there to have fun and basically audition for Dancing with the Stars"?
Well, I'm fine with that because that's because you got to make something out of this.
Sure,
there are a lot of sports where I would say we are not at an even rate with somebody else. Like we're not. Norway can do things we can't do with skiers, even though Norway has a much smaller population.
Yeah, but we get
everybody
it.
Skis. That's fine.
Yeah.
Ice skating, no. Nobody should have an advantage over us on ice skating. No. Uh-uh. We should be even, and we didn't get a sniff of it, right?
How long's it been? 2006,
I don't know.
I think, since we've meddled in that.
We haven't meddled at all?
I think that is
correct.
Like,
we haven't had anybody get even a bronze medal?
I mean, this is just me talking, so it could be my opinion.
No, we should look that up.
Okay, I will. We'll have it for you. Actually, can we have it later in the show? Maybe in the mailbag segment we'll have it for you.
Well, that will be the additions and corrections and stuff like that. We got Tony Reale to talk about it. All right, we'll get out of here now. Ian Hornaday, when we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Squarespace ad. As we know, Michael has used Squarespace on the Tony Kornheiser website, right?
I am a paying user of Squarespace, yes.
Okay.
It's not the Squarespace?
I don't think it is. It's not like the Hulu or the Facebook. Create a beautiful website to turn your cool idea into a new website. Showcase your work, blog or publish content, sell products and services of all kind, promote your physical or online business, announce an upcoming event or a special project, and more. Squarespace does this by giving you beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Powerful e-commerce functionality lets you sell anything online. The ability to customize look and feel, settings, products, and more with just a few clicks. Everything is optimized from mobile right out of the box. It's a new way to buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions. There are analytics that help you grow in real time, built-in search engine optimization, free and secure hosting, nothing to patch or upgrade ever. I did not understand a word that I just read. I'm too old. 24/7 award-winning customer support. We're encouraging folks to make it. Make it yourself. Easily create a website by yourself. Make it stand out. Stand out with a beautiful website. The future is coming, though not for some, not for me. Make it brighter with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the promo code Tony to save 10% off your first purchase of a website domain.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by someone signing his name Michael Little. Now, we don't know if that's his name or if that is the code that he goes by.
Well, he's a little. Either way, he's a little.
So we don't know. And he writes, I've included two songs from my very good friend David Williams with his permission. I hope you find them worthy. And I like stale Oreos. Well, that's good to know.
Info for life.
P.S. Don't read my name on the radio, Michael Little. This is either when I get back home or we don't play that way.
This is when I get back home.
Okay. So it's very nice.
Yeah, it's very lovely.
And again, you can hear the music in its entirety at the end of the podcast, unless we completely louse this up, and yes. I don't think that we do.
No.
Anne Hornaday is with us now. She has three movies to talk about, and I think we'll probably spend the majority of the time on Black Panther, which opened last week to about $350 million worth of business and is seemingly destined to become one of the all-time box office champions. Anne wrote a beautiful essay last week about the cultural meaning of this particular movie, which my friend Douglas Alden sent to me saying, you need to read this. This may be the best short film essay I have ever read.
Wow.
So you got that going for you, which is nice. So, I think the question I have, I understand, and I've had a lot of conversations with the younger people at PTI about Black Panther.
The younger people.
They're much younger than I, and I understand.
I've been told.
It's a cult.
50s yes. and down. I understand. The under 50 crowd.
Well, this is actually this is around 30. I understand the cultural import of it. These kinds of movies are lost on me because they're comic book movies, and I don't really watch them. But the cultural import is one thing. How good a movie is it? I mean, it may be a great and important work, but how is it a great movie too?
It is. And I take your point. It's not for me either. Like, I'm not a comic book movie person. So when I go to these comic book movies, I want them to be good because I think, comic book movie fans deserve to have good movies, just like the way everybody else deserves to have good movies. You know, it's like within the strictures of those genres. Let's make sure they're really well executed and they don't patronize the audience, and they have even though they are genre exercises, they have enough novelty and originality and voice and vision to stand alone as a good movie. And this checks all those boxes.
Good.
I mean, it's just absolutely beautifully executed. It's directed by Ryan Coogler. I don't know if you ever caught up with Fruitvale Station and Creed.
Creed, I was in. Thank you for watching.
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't ever watch movies that I'm in, which eliminates the great Mr. 3000.
Right.
You're
and
in
Creed.
So many, though.
But I met Michael Jordan. I met him at PTI.
Great.
Liked him very much. Nice kid.
And you raved about Fruitvale when it came out, and that must have been maybe
4 years ago?
No, I love that.
5 years ago.
I love that. Everybody should see that.
Still
movie.
In my queue.
So,
I'm
aware of him. Yeah. I'm aware of the work. I will tell you this. My friend Jay, who's one of the young kids that I talk to, and Jay is a young black man for whom this is an extremely important movie, and we had this talk yesterday about what it means when you see something and you relate to the characters, even when they're comic book characters, and you see the effort involved. What he was most taken by in this movie was the accomplishment of all the people acting in it. He thought it was like, a total all-star cast.
It is. And it's like watching the Royal Shakespeare Company, because these people are bringing such granularity and depth and texture to these roles, that it really does. There are moments where you feel you're watching a Shakespearean performance because of the psychological depth. And then It's been shot by Rachel Morrison, who is nominated for an Oscar for her work on Mudbound.
Which is
also shot,
terribly bleak and depressing, but beautiful in its way.
Yeah, but beautiful. There's no question that that is a beautifully shot movie. And so there's this visual richness, and the production design is the Hannah Bleichler, who did the Lemonade video, the visual album for Beyonce. The costumes by Ruth Carter, they're calling back to African roots and cultural traditions and beadwork and textiles that really resonate. And again, even though this is an origin story, and so it's going to hit some of those beats that you and I don't care about, right? Like, okay, it's got to have a car chase, you know, it's got to have a battle royale, it's got to have this. But and Wonder Woman did the same thing. Within those strictures, there's so much expressive emotion, and there's so much, I think, visual artistry that it kind of makes it look like something new. I was completely engrossed the whole
time.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, I don't want to just say that I won't watch any of these kinds of movies, because I've seen bits and pieces of Wonder Woman, and I've liked it. And I think that, you know, if we had this notion of comic book movies, and then it's very possible that Raiders of the Lost Ark would be a comic book movie, and I would say I don't want to go see that, and I loved Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Star Wars would have been a comic book movie.
I guess what I'm concerned with in some of these kinds of movies, some of the movies that whether or not, and I assume that you consciously go out to make a political statement when you do a movie like this with a cast like this, is it off-putting, like if you're an old white man, do you say, what am I doing here? Or is it welcoming to everyone?
Yes.
Oh, totally. And I want to push gently back on that you're making a political statement. I mean, this movie, I think, very subtly and effectively weaves in political arguments.
Right.
And these are political arguments having to do with the legacy of colonialism and how the African-American community relates to the diaspora, you know, the African diaspora. You know, different strategies, different ways, different degrees of militancy in terms of pushing back on white supremacy. But it's never, that's never the point. You know, it's woven into the film in a way that I think, again, makes it more specific and more interesting, but not didactic.
See,
it just makes it much more, I think, fully lived in and relevant and kind of exciting. And so, no, I think that if anything, it just presents this world that, you know, the thing I wrote about in this essay was how we've been deprived of these images for almost a century because, you know, Hollywood thought that white people wouldn't see movies with black protagonists. That was never true. It was a myth that they enforced. They also thought that black doesn't travel, right, that international audiences won't buy these movies. That's not true. So, no, I mean, these are worlds that are open to anybody.
And kind of on the other side of the coin, I kept thinking of, for decades, black youth have had to sit there and watch, like, this princess, white princess with cinnamon buns on the side of her head.
Yeah,
exactly.
And didn't have, you know, the equivalent of a black heroine
or as
hero.
Wilbon always tells me, I don't watch Friends.
Right.
I'm not watching Friends. I go, Seinfeld. He goes, no. And I go, come on, Seinfeld. He goes, no, not watching. So this is then as triumphant, you believe, as a movie as it is in terms of the culture.
Oh, absolutely.
Good.
And I would never, and I would not have said otherwise if I didn't believe it.
Okay, so let's leave that for a second. By the way, though, the ads they do for the movie, I think they're Lexus ads.
Yeah.
They're fabulous.
Yeah.
The Lexus ad is really fabulous.
By the way, this was...
Where he jumps into the car.
I would just say about your fear of... Not fear, but your distaste, general distaste for these superhero movies. This was, to me, way... I'm interested in your opinion, Anne, but less superhero-y than the others, to me. I mean, it was just...
Scary, yeah.
You know, like, less of the... It was more story-driven,
no
I thought.
No spandex.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this isn't the unit.
I lump everything in a box.
Yeah, there was less of this sort of cartoon type dialogue.
I just assume that anything
that
Hugh Jackman might be in is in that box. So, and he might be in this in the sequel.
Yeah, this was on the feature side of that spectrum.
Yeah.
All right, so now we get to the ridiculously titled Annihilation. This is another movie. There's zero chance I'm going to see just because I can't say to somebody, I'm going out to the movies tonight to see Annihilation. But it does have two very interesting actresses, Natalie Portman and Jennifer Jason Leigh. Very, very good actresses.
Yeah.
Is this any good?
You know, it's good until it's not. And the reason sort of like I went show. Into this with such high expectations is that it's directed by a guy named Alex Garland, who did one of my favorite movies of a few years ago called Ex Machina. Do you remember that, anybody?
Yeah, that's with Vikander.
Yeah.
Alicia Vikander played a robot that is
right,
kind
AI.
Of nearly human. Mm-hmm. Donald Gleason. It was so good. It was just one of the best movies of that year. And he's very good at building a convincing futuristic world where you're not quite sure, you know, it's just so close to our own reality, but just with these little subtle gradations. And so this is... He had written Ex Machina. This is actually based on a book, and so I feel kind of like maybe my problem is whenever this happens, I think, well, maybe I just wouldn't have liked the book. But it's about a group of women researchers who go in to investigate this mysterious blob that they call the Shimmer that is starting to take over the southern United States and find out what's going on inside. So,
is anybody mute, and is there a fish man in it?
No, but it's not quite that, okay. You know, but it does get into, it's very reminiscent of Alien, because you've got some creature scares in there, and then you've got some...
I loved Alien.
It's also like Arrival to me, you know, with this woman kind of trying to understand an alien life form and going like, you know, kind
I sort of liked Arrival. I sort of liked Arrival.
But this, and so this has that same, and again, Garland creates this really interesting mood that's very quiet and subdued and muted. He uses, the soundtrack is an acoustic guitar, you know, which you don't really usually hear with stuff like, so there's a lot of organic kind of cool vibes about this film I was digging.
Also that Crosby, Stills, Nash song, Helplessly Hoping.
Yeah, they use Helplessly Hoping as a motif. And so I was really loving those choices. Portman's mesmerizing. Like you said, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez.
This is a good actress.
Really good supporting cast. The great Tessa Thompson. And I will just say, to cut to the chase,
Wanda Sykes?
I really do think it falls apart in the third act. I just do. Okay. You know, it really starts going south in more ways than one.
All right, so we're getting off that movie now. We're getting off the train on that movie.
Okay, sorry.
We'll go to Game Night.
Yeah.
Game Night with Jason Bateman and Rachel McAdams. And you wrote about that. I read some of what you wrote today.
Oh.
So you talk about that. Please talk about Game Night and in the context of today's life.
Absolutely.
Today's. Yeah.
Okay, so Game Night as a movie is... Okay, you know how you really loved Night and Day?
Loved it.
Okay, this is
Tom
in that...
Tom Cruise,
this
loved
is that
it.
Genre. This is that genre. It's that rom-com action, rom-action genre.
Yeah.
And it is really... It's funny. It's like... It's just kind of burbled along, and you're laughing. Jason Bateman, hilarious.
I love him.
He's good.
That persona that he has, that kind of nervous, anxious, straight, deadpan guy... barely holding it together. He is just great. Rachel McAdams, you know, who's really done more drama lately, like with Spotlight, she once again, she is such a gifted comedian. I mean, she's absolutely charming. And the two of them together are great, and there are just some hilarious slapstick bits, funny jokes, gags, all the way through. And I want to stipulate that I really did enjoy this movie.
There's a but.
It has a fair degree of gunplay in it, and guns being used kind of played for laughs, and gunshots and wounds, and you know, it's not a factor of too soon, because like I said in my piece today, we're in a constant state of too soon now, with school shootings and shootings elsewhere. But it really, I think, is a matter of will this play anymore? You know. Because I didn't find it, I kind of cringed. I could feel the audience cringe during some of these sequences. And you know, it's one of, I will admit, it's a pet peeve of mine. People know that who've been reading me. I don't like it when guns are treated as toys. I don't like it when guns, frankly, are treated for style. You know, to be cool. I think they're tools. I think we should just treat them seriously. You know, it's a part of American life, sure, but let's not fetishize them and let's not trivialize them. And that's my one quibble with this movie, but I don't want to throw the whole movie out because it really is very entertaining. But I couldn't escape it. I couldn't not notice it.
So what is interesting about that to me, of course, is that this movie was written well over a year ago and probably filmed at least 1 year ago when events were different, and they have the misfortune of coming out in a week where it appears that, and I say this hopefully, that there is an actual chance. For the first time ever in the country, to do something very different about guns.
But that very climate different. Was well established before this. The climate that
I know, but this movie,
but
this specific
we didn't have these kids.
Yeah.
This specific movie becomes, you know, it's just a historical accident for this movie, which is made, I'm sure, right, with good intentions, and is funny.
Of course,
and is funny.
And it's by no means is it the worst offender. And you know, my question I'm posing in the piece today is this the generation that will finally say we just don't want to see it? You know, it's like it's like they're making new demands of movies in terms of diversity. They're making new demands of movies in terms of, you know, sexism and homophobia, that they're not going to accept stereotypes anymore or caricatures or cruel jokes. And so I'm just wondering, maybe this is another trope that is going to go by the wayside because this young generation is going to be like, you know what, it's not funny.
So let me ask
you
a question.
We don't think it's cool. And a real test is going to come next week with Death Wish because that's the movie.
Why? That's so stupid to remake a movie. Like that.
I mean, it's out there. But I mean, talk about a movie that's missing its, that's the ultimate
really
good guy with a gun movie, and it looks ridiculous. It just looks like a relic from another age.
Well, it's a bad idea. But let me, apropos of what you're saying, and not to go on and on and on, but what happens to the career of Mel Brooks? You know, like all of Mel Brooks' comedy is based on
everything.
You know, it's based on everything that we don't like anymore. And it was,
no, but we appreciate it for what it is in the context. I mean, you know, we don't impose presentism. You know, historians have that term, presentism. Don't judge things through the lens of today. Appreciate them for what they were at the time. I don't think it does anything. It's like, you know, just put it in the proper context and things change and evolve, you know?
Okay. Thank you, Ann.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Ann Hornaday, boys and girls. And you can hear Ann Hornaday's podcast with Arch Campbell. When can you hear that?
It'll be posted later today at the movies with Arch.
Should be up already, shouldn't it?
Well, yeah, if the guy who works on the show had his act together, sure.
All right, good. So we'll get out of here now, and we will have news when we return.
That's right.
I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the ZipRecruiter ad, and I have a series of options in front of me. I can choose option one, option two, or option three. I think I'm going to go with option two today.
Well, that's a sound.
Are you hiring, posting your position to job sites and waiting for the right people to see it? ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, and invites them to apply to your job. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive, so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. And that's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. We'll do this one more time for those of you who really want to bang your heads against the wall. ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
I need something to feed my soul.
This is Michelle Carmen. She writes, thank you guys so much for playing my song Shattered Glass a little while ago. I have another one for you to play. This one is from my last album. It's called I Need. Really hope you like it. I wanted to let you and any littles in the Philadelphia area know. She has a show Saturday night at Willow Grove, Pennsylvania. At Jacob's Music from 6:30 to 8. You can find all the info on the website, Michelle Carmen, M-I-C-H-E-L-E, Carmen, K-A-R-M-I-N.com. Even though I know she knows that I won't make it, she hopes to see a lot of littles. Michael, how do people like Michelle send in their music and get it played on this high-quality podcast?
Send your original music into the show jingles at TonyKornheiserShow.com.
And are we selling anything other than the fine shattered t-shirts available here for $12 each?
We have some wonderful Tell Michael umbrellas.
Which we could use in the Northeast.
That given the recent weather, you might need those for weeks more.
I took the dog out real early today and just, it was miserable. Rainy, miserable. I mean, not cold.
Gloomy.
But just, dank.
Yeah.
Dank, you know. All right, what do you got?
What's the phrase that your father used to say?
Nice day for a hatchet murder.
Right. Yes, I just want to add a couple of things. One, I've seen Michelle Carmen perform, and she is fantastic. So
that's
if you're
great.
In the Philadelphia area, please check her out. And also, Spy Genius, we had the technical problems yesterday where you couldn't hear the music of that one band. And
the British band.
The British band called Spy Genius. I had some emails back and forth because I like to talk to people from home.
Yeah.
And they got some tour dates. They're all out in like Southern California coming up. But I highly recommend them. Just it's a fantastic song.
Excellent.
So yeah, good,
really,
good,
really
good,
like
good,
it.
Good, good, good.
And now, Gary, you had done some research on the Olympics.
I was actually correct in my opinion that we hadn't won a medal in ladies figure skating since 2006. It was Sasha Cohen. That's not Borat, right?
No.
But that would be fun.
No. Sasha Cohen won the silver in 2006 in Torino. That was our last medal. Interestingly, before that, Salt Lake.
So we've now gone three in a row without medals.
Right. So prior to 2006, in 2002, we won gold and bronze with Sarah Hughes and Michelle Kwan, respectively. The year before that, we won gold and silver with Lipinski and Michelle Kwan, respectively. The year before that,
well,
Nancy Kerrigan.
That was before that. She won silver. Oksana Baiol was a kid. She was like 16 years old, something like that.
Correct.
Nobody knew who she
was. So, yeah, we had, and the year before that, Kerrigan won one. The Olympics before that, Kerrigan won. The Olympics before that, Debbie Thomas won. The Olympics before that, Rosalind Summers. Then
these were not gold medalists, though.
No, but these were all medals. We were meddling every single year.
We should.
Yeah, it really is.
We have ice in America. We have ice rinks in America. We have coaches in America. And we have costumes in America.
From
we
68
win.
To 06, we medaled every single
well, we
year.
Should.
And we have not medaled since 06.
Yeah. By the way, there's an upset.
This is not like cross-country skiing. We're not going to win.
Right. No, we got a medal.
Well, I mean, but that's, you know, that we don't figure to win.
Mm-hmm.
There is an upset brewing right now in hockey. Germany is leading Canada in their semifinal match 4-1.
Wow.
Wouldn't that seem to be a massive upset?
Well, yeah, but when you say it's brewing right now.
It's 4-1.
I mean, we drop at 11 o'clock Eastern, well, it'll be over.
Okay.
Well, it's over if it's 4-1. Yeah. I mean, that's like a 34-point lead in college. Nobody's ever given that up.
And speaking of that, Drexel has now set the record for the biggest comeback in Division I basketball, overcoming a 34-point first-half deficit to beat Delaware 85-83.
Do you know what I thought about when I saw on the crawl that Drexel had done this? At 6 in the morning or something like that. And I said, oh, my God, did we play out of conference? Did they play Drexel? Did they do it to us?
You realize to overcome a 34-point deficit, you'd have to score at least 35 points
and so
in
was,
the game.
And so was Delaware. What Drexel's right next door to
Penn.
Yes,
this is a big win for Sam Angel.
Sam Angel. This is a very big win for Sam Angel. They put the coach on the overnight sports center.
Oh, really?
I mean, he stayed up real late to be on. That's a big – when you're Drexel – and you're on SportsCenter, this is a big deal.
So, I want to say 51 or 53 to 19.
Two and a half minutes left in the first half.
Drexel went on a 10-0 run to finish the half, but still ended down 24. In the second half, they had separate runs of 18-4 and 17-4.
And they were the home team. They were the home team, so that was nice. Good for them. Good for Drexel.
An emotional night in hockey last night down in Florida where the Panthers hosted the Capitals.
It was a lovely speech.
Yeah, sure
Roberto,
was.
Goalie, Roberto
by Bobby
Longo.
Lou.
Yeah.
It was a great speech.
Yeah, spoke.
If you haven't seen this, please see it. He talks about the fact that he lives in Parkland.
Panther goalie Roberto Luongo.
Yeah, who used to be one of Stanley Cup at Vancouver, maybe once.
If you say so.
I don't know. But Roberto Luongo's been in the league for a long time. Just look him up as to how long he's played. And he talked about how his wife was born and raised in that area. He's from Parkland. His kids go to school. Not that school, but his kids go to school in Parkland. He said, and when I'm done, that's where I'm going to live. That's where I'm going to live the rest of my life. And he's fighting back tears. Utterly reasonable to be in that position. And he goes, enough is enough. Now, you don't hear athletes are most, they are in a lot of ways part of the most conservative group in the world, athletes. They really are incredibly disciplined, get coaching all the time, fishing, hunting people, all of that stuff. They are not the kind of people that say the end with guns. They're not. And he did, and the other hockey players are, you know, banging on the side of the boards. And again, I mean, my feeling on this is Jeannie and I are the only people in this table old enough to remember this. There was a movement on the part of young people in this country that changed the attitude towards the Vietnam War. It took a long period of time, but they were willing to march. They were willing to go wherever they had to go. I mean, we were part
of
that.
And get arrested.
Yeah, and that was okay. Now, what is the worst? Well, how do you quantify the worst? But certainly Sandy Hook is unbelievably terrible. But little kids can't organize and get in buses and take these trips and lobby state capitals or the nation's capital. But high school and college kids can.
Yeah.
They can do that. There is a chance here. There's a chance here that something really good will happen, not just the outlawing of bump stocks and not just changing the ability to buy assault rifles at 21 instead of 18. Maybe getting rid of assault rifles, which is very hard to think that anybody needs. Now, we're in a process now where we're debating whether or not teachers and aides should carry guns. That's not the issue that the people who are marching are going to care about, right?
Well, you know, and I was thinking, one of the things I see in these young people is anger. And that's a lot of what motivated our generation. We were watching young men go off and get killed.
Yes. 58,000. For something that we didn't understand.
Right.
Didn't really understand.
And they're being deprived of their childhood. I mean, high schools can be horrible, but it's also the most wonderful time of your life. And they're not getting that. They're being deprived of that because there is this cloud, and they're ticked off about it.
So it might, right? There is a chance to do something that changes the culture. There's a chance.
I hope. I mean, I'm a
cynic.
You have a teenager in high school?
I do. And to Jeannie's point, she's cried to me about wanting to worry about her acne and getting a boyfriend, you know, not having to worry about stuff like this. And it's really, that's an aspect of it that for me is really sad. But I want to say one other thing about the notion of arming teachers, and we're not here to have that debate, and certainly we need safe schools. But armed teachers, having a teacher with a gun wasn't going to save anyone in Las Vegas. It wasn't going to save anyone at the Pulse nightclub. It wasn't going to save anybody at San Bernardino. I mean, the issue, as I see it, is the love affair with these weapons. I mean, yes, whatever we can do to make schools safer, we have to make them safer. That debate is going to be held by people smarter than me. But let's not actually diminish the issue by making it only about schools, because it's much more broad than that.
You taught high schools years.
Yeah, the question surrounding arming teachers is one that would make me immediately exit the classroom. If you think about all of the other concerns on a teacher's mind, from just the actual content of the classroom to the classroom dynamics, you know, that's a responsibility that I, as a responsible adult, don't feel like I would gladly or willingly accept that.
Are kids scared?
Yes.
Now?
Yes.
Like even small school, tiny. You know, tiny classrooms, scared.
Yes, and I think every school, whether it's a big school, whether it's a private school, a city school, you have your own concerns. And when you enter that campus, you are trying to basically enter this covenant with everyone who is going to be on that campus. For me, when I was in high school, we had the D.C. sniper, which brought different fears to going to school every day. But what these kids are going through right now, I've never had those fears, and I can't imagine going through everything else that is involved with high school with that hanging over me as well.
Well, I'll say this about the fear, just in talking to my kids. I don't know that fear – they're not afraid like I would be afraid, because they've done code red drills their entire life in school. Just like you used to sort of get under the desk and, you know, with the air raid.
It's the bomb.
Like, yeah, it's the nuclear bomb.
Here come the Russians.
Yeah. Like the desk would save us.
So, the desk will protect you from
I mean, sure it's heartbreaking to think, but they have grown up in a world where getting shot at school, they understand, is like a possibility, however remote.
Not
for us, it was completely unthinkable.
Not to make light of this, I've had to run those drills where you're in a classroom that has as many windows as this atrium, and all they have is a little cloth fabric that's rolled up, and when they sound the alarm, you unfurl it, the kids get down, they hide behind cement blocks, and you're sitting there trying to have a meaningful discussion as to what would we actually do. And there's different levels. If you hear a certain alarm, everyone gets out of the school and you basically
run. You run. Right.
And for these drills where you're hunkering down, you're sitting there saying, I don't want to make light of this again, but if somebody wanted to get into this classroom, I don't think my little door jam or even that piece of fabric is going to stop anybody.
Well, it's a school.
I've had to, I see this when people, when there are tragedies like this, and that occur with frequency now, obviously, and people who write say, this. Well, this is what I would have done. Well, no, you don't know what you would have done. Don't know what you would have done.
As evidenced by what we saw or didn't see from this on-duty deputy.
Yeah. Didn't go in. Right. So you don't know. You just don't know.
By the way,
can we make this funnier?
I'll try. Roberto Luongo in the NHL since 1999.
Yeah, he's been long. He's a long time. It's like 20 years. He never won a Stanley Cup?
I think he did, actually. Did you say maybe with Vancouver?
I said Vancouver.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
I think he did.
And I just
several gold medals with Canada.
Bobby Lou, he came to the PTI show once. Very nice.
Yeah,
very
and a great speech. And I just want to say for the record, I've always been in favor of GUB reform. So
yeah,
I want to make sure everyone understands that. There is an interesting story coming out of Missouri. I don't know if we have time to really get into this, but the governor, Eric Greitens, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Doesn't really
Greitens,
matter, does it?
It's not Greater, which
really
we
matter.
Like their ice cream from there. But and he has now been booked in the St. Louis jail on charges that he photographed his former hairstylist nude and attempted to blackmail the woman with whom he was having an extramarital affair. His resume is utterly, it's just spectacular. He was a graduate of Duke, Rhodes Scholar, studied at Oxford, master's degree, PhD, Navy SEAL, served in Iraq, Afghanistan, Africa, Southeast Asia, Bronze Star, Purple Heart. He's an author. Now he's a governor, and a lot of people.
Well, now he's under arrest.
Well, now he's under arrest.
Now he's,
now he's
released
yesterday, he had all that, and now he's under arrest.
And this is a guy that people thought might have a shot to be president someday.
Nah, he's still very well might.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not disqualifying anybody from that. We're not playing that game.
Yes, this is not a deal breaker.
Right.
He has refused to resign. So he's like, I'm going to ride this out.
Right, well, he contends he hasn't committed a crime.
Yes.
I mean, he admits to the affair. But says he did not commit
a
crime.
The picture is of her nude and blindfolded and handcuffed, I believe.
Right, allegedly.
Yeah, yep. Allegedly.
With the threat that he would distribute it if she ever mentioned that the affair had happened. So
I don't see that going down well in Missouri. I don't know.
Or anywhere, really.
Yeah.
Or anywhere. That's
No one cares about the president's recently reported affairs, so maybe he can skate on.
And I would like to have one Florida Man Friday for his story for you to Vero Beach. And it has been a busy 3 months for Jeremy Michael Avant, a 37-year-old man who was arrested just this past Tuesday at a CVS pharmacy in Vero Beach after being asked to leave several times. He refused. They called a law enforcement official. He put his fist into the air and said, all right, which one of you wants to fight me? They took him down. And then in the car, he completely...
Don't tase me, bro.
Right. While on the way to jail, Avant screamed profanity and threats at me, stated he was going to get out of jail and fine me, blah, blah, blah. And you say, what else has he been doing? The week before New Year's, he was arrested for disorderly intoxication after he pulled his pants down inside a senior living facility. Something you can look forward to.
I'm going
to
do that.
Yeah. Then just a week later, arrested for, again, disorderly intoxication after he was found urinating outside the Beals department store.
Can't he just have orderly intoxication?
Yes.
Then a couple weeks after that, arrested for disorderly intoxication again after he was found sleeping in the infant department at Walmart. So it's been a busy
couple months. Busy boy. We'll get out of here. We'll have Old Guy Radio with Steve Sams when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This Old Guy Radio for the day. This is one of the top 100 songs, if not one of the top 50 songs of all time. I love this song, Every Breath I Take. This is the Police. They signed, in terms of critical commentary, they signed their record deal 40 years ago today.
Wow.
They broke up after a few years and... their main guy, Gordon Sumner, is that his actual name, Gordon Sumner?
Yes.
Former high school English teacher, like Michael Kornheiser. But he goes under the name Sting and apparently works out 14 hours a day.
Yeah, he looks good.
Because he's close to 70 and you can't believe what he looks like. Yeah. So.
And apparently this was like a really dark, sinister song. He wrote it when he was leaving one relationship and getting involved in another, and he just was in a really dark place. And so Sting has always said
he just turn on the lights?
Well, that's true. He could have done that.
I guess in England they don't have lights.
No, we don't really like lights over there. Or toothbrushes, for that matter. But he said he's really shocked and surprised when people come up and say, oh, that was the song we played at our wedding.
Fantastic
we love it
song.
So much.
It's a fantastic song.
Yeah.
Steve Sands joins us now. Your boy Joe Martin sent us an email today with a picture of himself in front of a whole bunch of monitors in Korea. And the most important question I have, And you understand this. How's that toilet working out still? Is it you still sit on it hours at a time because it is the envy of Barry's Verluga and Liz Clark beyond measure?
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, the police brings Gary and me back to our Charles W. Woodward days.
Is that right?
Indeed.
That's the first thing. Second of all, we're going on 23 days here in South Korea.
Yeah,
I have yet to stand for a one or two.
Too much information.
Barry, no, it's not you. You love it. Barry and I have texted back and forth.
Yes, he said
too
that.
Busy. He's too busy. He's now a columnist, and he's a busy guy. Liz Clark, however, and I actually chatted for 30 minutes in our hotel yesterday because she was here to interview Dale Earnhardt Jr. For a piece that she's going to be doing. And we sat and chatted for 30 minutes in the bar area, and it was great to see Liz. And she walked into the hotel and texted me and said, I hate you and our relationship is over because my dump doesn't compare to this palace.
Well, this is true. Liz is like a pensioner compared to you. And the fact that you let her into your hotel will probably make her life worse as she goes back to her sad existence of folding up her clothing and putting it on the floor. Because where she lives, she's not allowed to use the drawers. It's just so bizarre.
The great thing about Liz is that Liz is like, you know what? The weirdest thing about covering the Olympics, as you know, Tony, internationally, is that you can't see what America is watching because you don't have NBC or any of the networks that we have showing the Olympics. However, when you're staying in an – and this bothered her too. I'm laughing. When you stay in an NBC hotel, they make a deal – NBC, NBCSN, USA, and CNBC are all on our TVs in our room so we can watch what's going on back in the United States. It's just one of the perks, I guess, of paying $1 billion and being a rights holder. But well, Liz and I had fun. I love Liz. We talked a lot about Springsteen and the Olympics and experiences. And she has never seen us on TV yet.
I read
her every day online, which – this is a bizarre deal, but this hotel's nice, Tony. You would really, really enjoy. You ought to come over to Pyongyang for a couple of days.
Now, Steve, how many La Chiserie's have you heard?
Have you heard any?
You know what's funny? It's funny. I had not heard one until 2 days ago. And 2 days ago, now I'm on the infield in the oval for speed skating, and speed skating is so big here. The place is rocking. I mean, rocking every night. But we're there real early, obviously, and the fans here get real. We don't come on till 8 o'clock at night here, which is 6 o'clock in the morning in the East Coast, back in the U.S. And the fans are let in around 6:30, hour 90 minutes early, and they're just sitting there hanging out. I'm on the infield, and you know the ice isn't that wide. We're not too far from the seats, and I'm walking around the infield. I'm not kidding you. About four or five people were looking at me and waving and all that kind of stuff, and one guy stands up and yells, "La Chiserie!"
Fantastic.
It's the only time it's happened here. But I'm telling you, it put a big smile on my face.
That's
it was
great.
Very funny.
I know you're anchored to the skating. Do you feel stuck at the skating? Or have you been able, because you're there 3 weeks, have you been able to get out and see other things, right? Because you have a prescribed time you have to be there.
Yeah, exactly. We're at an advantage here because we're on at night here. So it's on prime time here in Korea because it's such a big deal here in Korea, the speed skating. Not that speed skating is not back in the U.S., but they set up time. You know, figure skating, for instance, is in the morning here so that it can be live back home in the United States in prime time. Figure skating is bigger there, whereas speed skating is bigger here. So anyway, so I've gone to some hockey games. I went to short track speed skating. I went to figure skating. I walked over and saw curling. We've had two dark days, two off days in the 23 we've been here. I went up to the mountain and saw... never seen it before. It's really cool, man. That the Luge skeleton bobsled deal, those people are
crazy.
Out of hand.
They're crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
They are crazy. And seeing that live and you know how spoiled we are with the vantage points we get as opposed to where the fans are sitting in seats, they are flying. I mean, they are absolutely flying. I think the Olympics is so cool. These people work all their lives for these one quick moment. You know, these moments, and it means everything to them, and it's fun to see all the different sports. I did not get to the alpine skiing. Weather kind of messed up their schedule a little bit, but, yeah, we've seen a bunch of events. It's been really cool.
So you're there almost 3 weeks now, as you say, or 3 weeks now. You're not in America. I mean, you're surrounded by all the people you work with, and you have all the comforts of home and yada, yada, yada. But you're not here. Is there anything other than the latest update on Kirk Cousins that you really miss about America?
I wouldn't mind a medium rare bone-in ribeye. that would be nice. I've gone, you know, we work every night, so I've not gone out to dinner a lot, but we've had a couple of nights where we've gone out to dinner. One of them was Italian. It was Korean-Italian. I wouldn't mind a nice chicken parm from the Palm.
Right.
That would be fabulous.
Bowl of Wilbon's chili, maybe?
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind a bowl of Wilbon's chili or some wings and cheddar. Yeah. I wouldn't mind a cold Coors Light. I've had enough Cass for anybody to handle. I've been drinking some Cass here. That's the Korean equivalent of whatever beer you would choose back home. But right. I wouldn't mind a chili Coors Light. I wouldn't mind a Tito's on the rocks with a couple of lemons. They don't have Tito's.
Right, but you get to pay $45 for like less than an ounce of actual liquor at some point. So
it's remarkable. I've worked for free here the last 23 days. it has been a tough spot at the bar here, which is the most fun you have here. By the way, if I don't say that I don't miss my family, then they're going to be listening to this going, wait a second, what happened to us? You miss booze and steak.
This is what I remember most.
I miss the family as well. And by the way, Tony, I'm only home for a day and a half. I go to Mexico City for golf on Wednesday. So,
well, I mean, in covering the Olympics, what I remember the most, depending on where you are and the free time that you have when you're done, is sitting right around and very often with journalists, at least in the old days, journalists from other countries than your country, and watching right them steadily devolve into where they're going to have a fist fight. And then getting out just before the Austrian journalists start fighting the French journalists. You know, because that happened every
in the mix zone.
Happened every single night. Every night. You could chart what happened. Like the next morning, different guys would come in with bandages on their faces because they had been drunk and got fights. So.
All right. So we're down in the mix zone, which is where the broadcasters for television stand. And basically, to be honest, they're the ones who pay the most money. The host country, yeah. So the Korea, SBS in Korea is here. OBS, which is the Olympic broadcasting system that goes to all the countries that don't send cameras here. Obviously, NBC pays its fair share, so we're down there. So what that does is it allows it, and the Netherlands in speed skating has NOS, which is the NBC of the Netherlands there. So we're all, the four of us are there, and they do it by money. Everything in the Olympics is about money. It's ridiculous. So we are the ones who get the athletes first if we choose. But the Netherlands is there, and it's the biggest thing for them. It's live there every single day, and every one of their skaters wins every night.
Yes.
Like they did again
yes
tonight.
Yeah.
Kelton Nous won again tonight. And every time, I always say to them, no, you guys go first. And then they're always very appreciative. I don't care. It doesn't matter to us. They go first, and it's always great. And then they keep them for like 12 minutes, whereas we would ask them two questions.
Right.
They keep them for 12 minutes. So then the producer's in my ear screaming and yelling at me. And I'm like, well, you don't have to stay down there and be friends with these people. He goes, we're paying $1 billion. You don't have to be friends with anybody.
I understand.
I'm like, all right. But anyway, it's the best part of the whole thing, Tony, and I don't mean this in an alcoholic way, is the bar scene at our hotel. You would go crazy here. The Today Show, all here. So every now, the Today Show is on here live at 9 p.m.
Right.
7 a.m. back in the East. So every night, we're on at 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock at night, too. So every night, everybody kind of relaxes in the bar. And Savannah Guthrie, Hoda Kotb, Craig Melvin, Al Roker, they all walk in together. Andrea Joyce is here. All the NHL hockey guys you see on NBC and NBCSN are in the bar. It's a who's who, Lester Holt and all these guys. It's a who's who of people you've seen if you're an NBC watcher
yes
all your life or all, you know, the last 10 or 12 years. It's a pretty cool bar scene, actually.
So did you get a chance to watch Tiger?
I did actually watch Tiger. Do you know what Slingbox is, Tony? I'm sure Gary does. But
Slingbox?
I know what it is. I've never used it.
Doesn't subscribe to the Slingbox.
Well, no, I don't.
So I have no idea what it is or how it works. But a buddy of mine has an account, and I always use it whenever I travel internationally. And I've been watching a lot of it because of the time difference. I was able to watch it live. So, yeah, I saw what Tiger did. Shot even par.
Yeah. Took out the three wood a bunch of times. Hit the three wood.
I was just, he stole the words right out of my mouth. He took the driver out of his bag, or kept it in the bag and took the three wood out and found more fairway. You are not going to score on the PGA Tour unless you find fairways. There's no way.
Yeah, and also if you use three wood all the time, you're giving up too many yards. I mean, you got to hit hit driver.
You are, Tony, but you know, as we've talked about this before, the way PGA Tour players play golf at that level is they look at the golf course and they say, okay, here are six holes I can birdie, here are six holes that I happily would take a par, and here are six holes where this is going to be tough. Let's just walk away and see what we have. So if you take those six opportunities and actually make birdies on some of them, you're actually going to be ahead of the game if you're playing well, because you'll par the other ones. And, you know, even par on that golf course, the way Tiger's playing right now, is pretty good. I think
that's
he was tied
good.
For 21st. Yeah, I mean, even par tied for 21st. If he makes the cut and actually gets in the mix a little bit, gets the juices flowing, that's what he needs more than anything, because he's going to take next week off. He's not going to play Tampa. He's not going to play Mexico City because he's not eligible unless he wins this week. He's probably not going to play Tampa the week after, and then he's going to go to Bay Hill where he's played very well. So we'll see what happens.
I get you out of here on this. In your mind, who is the biggest star of these Olympics?
The biggest star of the Olympics. I mean, it sure looked like it was going to be Michaela Schifrin.
Yep.
But she got silver, and you know, we're a country, they celebrate around the world second and third better than we do. We don't celebrate silvers and bronze the way other countries do. Who's the biggest star? That's a great question. Biggest American star?
Well, just the biggest star. I mean, like when you walk away from the Olympics, you just say, this person, or I mean, I think you could, you might very well be able to say the women's hockey team, even though you cannot name a single person on it. You could say it.
I was at that game yesterday, by the way. I was literally going to ask you, am I allowed to pick a team or do I have to pick an individual?
No, I mean, it may be the team.
I think the women's hockey team, that was huge. That was huge for them. That was huge for the sport. I think it was a really good moment. I would say that was the biggest win that the Americans had. Americans just aren't very good, Tony, at the winter games. They're not great at it.
No, but I mean...
And our biggest people came up tiny. I mean, Lindsay didn't get the gold. Michaela was supposed to win multiple golds, didn't get it done. Nathan Chen was supposed to win figure skating, didn't get it done.
Yeah.
I mean, some of our best shots at gold and stardom came up tiny.
Yeah.
So, we'll see.
All right, enjoy the rest of it, and we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you next week at some point. Thank you, Steve. Travel safe. Hey,
somebody have a big steak for me this weekend.
We will.
Oh, yeah, happy to do that.
Steve Sands, boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with email and a jingle when we return. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
He gets cramped up by all that strange food. He loves speed skating, but needs to relieve. He never bothers with Johns at the rink. That's why Steve Sands loves his heated can. Loves the warm, soft touch on his bum. Life without care. He'll flush and then blush. He hates Pyeongchang. It's cold, man, oh, man. That's why Steve Sands loves his heated can.
So wonderful. Brian from Oak Hill is so wonderful. Inspired by the moment as I was listening to your podcast in the bathroom, I recorded the attached tribute to that life-changing moment for Steve Sands. Can't wait for the new sponsor, Reed. What a great addition they would make to your bathroom renovation project at Chatter. Before we get into the mailbag and the thank yous, I have a request of everybody who is listening to this show. Who are you? That's one of the starters they gave me as we ask you to fill out a short survey. We know you, whether you're new to the pod or go back to the internet show days. Now the folks who support this show would love to know just a little bit about you. If you have 2 minutes, and it really does only take 2 minutes, that's not even Gary math, help us make the show an even better experience for you by telling us more about yourself. And now I can say thank you to Ann Hornaday from the Washington Post and Steve Sands from NBC for coming on with us today. I'd also like to thank today's sponsors, ZipRecruiter and Squarespace. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. And if you're able to take the audience survey, just go to ListenerQ, L-I-S-T-E-N-E-R-Q, ListenerQ.com/Tony K. As a thank you, you will be entered into a drawing for a $100 Amazon gift certificate. 2 minutes, ListenerQ.com/Tony K. From Donnie Frieda in Bethesda. The below email is from my son's second grade teacher, who explains some of the rudimentary science regarding the rising and falling of the moon and indicates that the kids will be keeping a moon journal this quarter. That's different from a moon shadow. In learning about the phases of the moon, there's also a helpful link that gives the time of the moon's rise and fall each day. Given your repeated interest in and confusion regarding the placement of the moon on your ridiculously early Chessie walks, I thought you might want to have Mitchell find and print such a journal off the Google machine, and then you can keep your own journal along with the second graders at Ashburton Elementary. And maybe you could even sit in on the class when they go over the journals. I could do that.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm not going to do that, but I could do that. Phil Reno, Havertown or Havertown, Pennsylvania, GDS class of 90, Georgetown Day School. Sorry to skew local with this connection, but on Monday's show, during presidential trivia, you mentioned Georgetown Day and referred to the school as Little Hoyas. That was a mistake. That was Georgetown Prep of Little Hoyas. In fact, they are known as the Mighty Hoppers, as in grasshoppers. You are making the all-too-common conflation between Georgetown Day with Georgetown Prep. The differences, though, are numerous. Prep has football, GDS is co-ed. At Prep, they wear ties. At GDS, teachers and students are strictly on a first-name basis. Finally, Prep is 5 miles up Rockville Pike from Chatter in North Bethesda, and GDS is just a half mile down Wisconsin Avenue in the 20016. Well, an arcane bit of D.C. prep school trivia, I would expect better from the father of a Murray Fighting Frog. And you should have gotten better. I thought I self-corrected. I thought I corrected a little
bit. Try to do better the next
time. But he's right. Paul Wade in Columbia, Missouri, who's probably worried about his governor at the moment. Did you see that the USA won gold in women's cross-country skiing? When asked what they could credit their win to, Kicken Randall and Jesse Diggins talked about their winters training in the Washington, D.C. area. They said there's nothing that makes you move faster than an orange bald man chasing you down the street with a shovel.
Yeah.
Seems like the medal was a team effort. Jeff Pigott, who we know very well from Iowa.
That's right.
I think you may be missing something when it comes to the possible attempts at crawling by Bootsy, a.k.a. Walker Texas Ranger. Based on your description, I suspect he's not crawling but attempting his first plank. Is he crawling? Do you have anything?
It still is more of an army crawl, but he's getting very close to a proper leg, arm,
any
full
day
crawl.
Now.
Joe Naz in Raleigh. I was schooled by some people from Raleigh, not to pronounce it Raleigh. They came up from Raleigh. I hope I have that right. Regarding your leg cramps, try a spoonful of mustard before bed. You can also take mustard when and if they return, but mustard should do the trick.
No.
I suffered from leg cramps in my quads for a few years, sometimes in both legs at the same time. So painful that I often thought my quad muscles were going to tear as I tried straightening my legs. I've tried everything from soap under the mattress to magnesium and potassium supplements to pickle juice, but mustard works best, at least for me. It has yet to let me down. One last tip, if you get a cramp, put heat on your leg afterwards and that should get you back to sleep. I don't sleep. I was up at 2 this morning.
Physical therapist, Julie Nomeyer, who's a big little, swears by the soap thing, too.
Everybody does. Everybody writes us, says that soap in the bed works. You don't even have to apply it to your leg. Just keep it in bed with you.
Right.
Get rid of who's ever in bed with you. Put soap in the bed. From Greg Borsman, Minneapolis. Yesterday, my cable TV went out with a simple error message and a black screen. Thinking back to a recent pod, I decided to use a Dr. Kornheiser remedy. I picked up the remote and I yelled at it, fix the cable, fix the cable. With
that'll
no other inputs, the TV was rebooted and 12 minutes later I had a picture. Unbelievable.
That?
Who knew cable TV advice from Tony would actually be helpful? Information for life. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white. Thanks, everybody.
Honestly, what the fuck are we doing here?
Riding down that old dusty road, got some time on my hands to figure out my life and how it's gone wrong. I know my daddy's standing back there. I see him clear through the rearview mirror, and he'll be waiting for me when I get back home. When I get back home, I'm gonna be the man I oughta. try to live a life to make my daddy proud. Gonna start a new life with some kids and a wife, make up for time I've been gone. And I'll do it all when I get back home. The walls close in and years go by, stuck in this old prison cell. I miss my home, but here's where I belong. My days are filled with tears and regret. I close my eyes, but still I can't forget the choice I made, a life that now is gone. When I get back home, I'm gonna be the man I oughta. Try to live a life to make my daddy proud. Gonna start a new life with some kids and a wife, make up for time I've been gone. And I'll do it all when I get back home. Yeah, I'll do it all when I get back home.
I need something to feed my soul.
I feed my soul.